Welcome to the Visionary Chronicles, a business strategy podcast where we provide insight to those looking for creative, executable strategies built around the latest disruptive ideas, innovative cultures, product creators, and marketing solutions. Welcome to the Visionary Chronicles. I appreciate your time and wanted to start out today on this episode with kind of an extension of one that I had done previously, and I thought it was really beneficial for those that did listen and had a few questions coming from it. And what I wanted to do is kind of extend on that previous podcast, and that was one I had done, which was called Startup, How to Pitch Your Company to Investors. And really, that was where you had created your business plan, you had gone through the steps to properly prepare your company to pitch to investors. And so when I looked beyond that, one of the questions I had was, hey, how do I prepare, or what do venture capital companies look for? Now, that's a little bit different, obviously, than the private equity guys and gals, but it's also something that is shrouded a lot of times in mystery. And having dealt with them before, both the private equity as well as the venture capital groups, they are a little bit shrouded in mystery as far as what their requirements are, their qualifications. And a lot of times when I'm talking to business owners, entrepreneurs, there is a lot of misinformation, misnomers about what they look for, how they look for it. A lot of this shrouded in mystery and a lot of times leads to frustration with business owners, and why I kind of enjoy going through this and giving you a feel for how to prepare for a venture capital round of funding. And that's what this is about. This podcast is Venture Capital, How to Prepare Your Company. And so there is a difference between, and I talked also previously about private equity groups. There is a difference between venture capital and private equity. Venture usually comes a little bit sooner in the process, and as a result, what they look for is also a little bit different. So again, when you look at venture capital, a lot of times it's very shrouded in the mystery of who are they, what do they look for. And as much as I've been involved with the venture capital industry and having funded entrepreneurs and small businesses, to me, it still is a little bit shrouded in mystery, but there are some commonalities. So what I looked at was a couple things. One is my own experience, and then secondly was actual studies that have been done with many venture capital firms across the nation and globally. And a couple resources I got this from, Harvard Business Review, Inc. Magazine, a lot of different resources that I utilized, and I thought it would be beneficial for you to have me kind of give you a summary, what I felt was probably the most important things when you're looking to do business with a venture capital company. You know, what are these things that they look for, and what are their, what I kind of looked at as, what are their priorities? You know, how many deals do they do on average? And where do they find opportunities? These are all things that when I talk to small business owners and work with venture capital companies, if you're connected in the industry, it's a little bit easier process. And what I mean by that is the connections to those that have either done deals or those that have exited deals. And when you look at what their priorities are, that's where it becomes a little bit shrouded in mystery. And so what I wanted to kind of go through with you is a couple main points, what I call priority points in working with venture capital. There's this process that I call the hunt, and then there's the process that I call the odds, and then also the close, and then other factors, and the deal itself, and success or failure of each one of these deals, and on average, what are they looking for, and what's the approximate number of successes versus failures. And there's a lot of different numbers being thrown around out there, but I can tell you from studies and things that I've looked at, as well as actual studies that have been done, the first thing I looked at was, you know, the hunt, the deal flow, as they call it. You know, what do they look for as far as building a network of investors and entrepreneurs so they can build this pipeline of deal flow? And where does that come from? You know, it's very similar to networking for a job or networking to get into a company. It's very similar, actually, on the venture capital side. Networking is very important, and being well connected in the industry is extremely important. So either finding someone that has a network they've created within the venture capital or private equity industry and having offered up deals. Now, this is an interesting one because when you look at former entrepreneurs, companies, they're very tight with their information. And many times, and I've seen it myself personally, where people are reluctant to want to give up a potential opportunity to a VC firm unless they've solidified the deal up front with them and what they may get in return. So those that are successful, those that network, those investors, those former entrepreneurs, that's where the majority of the deal flow comes from. So if you're going to be able to either partner as a former entrepreneur or a current company, actually 34% of the deal flow actually comes from networking with investors or former entrepreneurs, and only 10% actually come from pitches of investors or entrepreneurs that are trying to get funded through a VC. So, you know, when you look at where does this deal flow come from, it's the ultimate importance to a venture capital company. So the more value you can provide to them on a company that you see that may need some venture capital funding that is within the portfolio of what that VC is looking for, you become very valuable to them. And what I'm getting at, and this is more so in regards to investors and former entrepreneurs that have exited a company, is building that relationship with VCs, and you become valuable to companies that are looking more for money because you're kind of that bridge between those two. So they will rely on you. And the last piece that I've seen, and this is the majority of the deal flow, is the other 20% comes from referrals. So when you have people that are in companies that may not need funding, but they know someone that may need funding, those are the referral side of the business. So you've got 34% on that deal flow side through networking. And that, again, is the most important aspect to a venture capitalist or private equity company, is having a network of investors, entrepreneurs that have very broad relationships with those companies in the industries that you see either coming up through the ranks or people that are on a bridge level that need funding from a VC in order to get to the next level. Now, one thing that I have found personally that's extremely important in building my network and being able to work with venture capital or private equity firms is finding those, what I call golden nuggets. I mean, those young entrepreneurs, there's so many of them today, and finding a great idea that can be commercialized with the help of others along the way. And what I mean by that is it could be, and I work a lot with UCLA, USC, UCI. I'm part of their entrepreneur program as a mentor and also a judge on contests that they have. And it's one avenue, quite interestingly, with venture capital companies that they need that type of resource, somebody that can sift through deals or companies and get a great idea that has an opportunity in the marketplace with the right team. And I'll get to the team in a minute because it's immensely important in why in making connections with companies and entrepreneurs that it's so valuable to be there in the front to build the trust with them, but also being able to define what you can do in order to get them to the next level. So the first thing that I look at is the hunt. So that's the hunt. The next is the odds. Always the second question I have from entrepreneurs is, well, what are my odds of, you know, being able to strike a deal with a venture capital firm? So I look at it as the funnel, and the deal flow hits the funnel. The odds are not in your favor. Let me put it very bluntly to you, it's not a good scenario for you to be able to execute a deal with a VC when you start looking at this funnel. So the inverted funnel is, let's say that there's 100 opportunities that get pitched to venture capital companies. Of that 100, 28% on average would garner what they call a meeting. And that is something that is a meeting where they're basically doing some type of due diligence in regards to the proposal itself and or through a network and friends where they're striking an interest. That's the first strike, is 28%. So right out of the gate, you've got 72% of companies that have been eliminated on the first stage of the funnel process. And of that 100, 10 go to an internal meeting. So that means merely you've gone from providing a proposal, getting a network, defining those 100 opportunities, windling it down to 28%. And then from there, you've got 10 that are actually going to get an internal meeting. And then from there, the next step is due diligence, which only 5% actually go through a due diligence process, and 2%, approximately 2%, get a term sheet. That means that they're actually going beyond due diligence, indicating they want to lock it up and see if they can make a deal with you. So what does that funnel look like? And I call it the odds. And I use a number of 100, which is a very common number to use for opportunities. So 100 opportunities, 28% go to a meeting and kind of starting to do some preliminary due diligence. From there, only 10% get to an internal meeting, 5 due diligence, and about 2% effectively get a term sheet. And even from term sheet, you still then have to execute the term sheet after the due diligence has been completed. So it'll even deplete further from there. So the number that's used a lot of times, and the reality of it, is maybe 1 out of 100. 1 out of 100 will go to completion of term sheet and actually get a deal with the BC. So the odds are definitely not in your favor, but at the same time, if you know what they're looking for, how to get in front of them, you can pitch multiple VCs within your particular category. And if you've done a good job and have a great management team, I'll get that again in a minute here, but you've got a great opportunity to be able to get funded by a VC firm. So it's not everything is lost. So you really have a great opportunity if you have all those ducks in a row. And once you've gone to term sheet, what is the, you know, the other third question, I guess, well, how long does this take once I get a term sheet to get a deal? And on average, it'll take 90 to 120 days of due diligence once you have that term sheet to get a deal closed. So that's on average. Some are longer, some are less. But that just kind of gives you a feel of what the actual timeline looks like. So we said the hunt, the odds, the timeline, and then the factors. And what are these factors that these VC or PE firms look for? And it's quite interesting because I'll say most people from an entrepreneur standpoint will be working so hard on their business plan. And I think that's great from a development perspective to have a business plan, set a vision, execute against that vision, and ensure you're tracking against that with the right people on your team and the right products in the marketplace to gain market share. So, but that is not the main reason that VCs will fund your company. That's where I go back to the management team is the most important piece of the puzzle if they're going to fund your company. Now, great vision is certainly one of those, opportunity in the marketplace, but who's going to execute that? So VC companies and PE companies are going to look for the founders to be able to do that. So the most important aspect of a deal is founders. In fact, it's mentioned in 95% of all deals. If you don't have a great foundational team that can execute the strategy, you are not going to get invested. So that's the number one factor. What's the number two factor? It goes back to the business plan and the opportunity as clearly defined, your vision, and also how you're going to execute against that vision and the opportunity in the marketplace. And also how they're going to exit. And I say that because don't think these VC and PE firms are going to sit on your company or board for 10, 15 years waiting for you to build a business. They want to exit. And they always want to have a defined exit at the very outset of the meeting and when they're going through their due diligence and defining what that looks like in the reality of the multiple they're going to get on their investment. And so that's 75% of the time. Is they want to know how the business plan gets executed into the marketplace. The third one, which is market share and market size, I should say. So when you're going into a category, are there competitors? Now, this could be where it's a $10 billion market, but if you're going up against an Adidas or a Nike with defined market share and a lot of not only brand loyalty, but community loyalty to that brand, you're going to have a very difficult time, even if it is a very large market size. So many times VCs look for a niche opportunity. And this kind of goes back to athleisure. It's a sub-segment to apparel where you may have a sports apparel company like Nike and Adidas. Do you want to fight on their turf, or do you want to literally go into another niche where you can find an opportunity and grow it? Now, a lot of companies, and this is where you see a lot of opportunity, is subsets within larger markets. So subset of apparel is athleisure, and a company like Lululemon or many other brands that have been extremely successful in building a market off of what you would traditionally call a sports apparel market. So gives you an idea of defined market. Doesn't necessarily need to be the largest market. It just needs to be where you can actually grab market share on a new category of business, and it's a reality. So that's 70% of the time. And then you get into the industry itself. How competitive is this industry? And I go back to, which is a great example, I go back again to a Nike and Adidas and Under Armour, where there's a lot of brand loyalty, a lot of brand, what they call brand equity. Now, there can be commodities and there can be brand equity. There's a good, better, best strategy. The difficulty with trying to go into a better strategy in a category of business or industry where there's an established leader is trying to grab that market share, not just by a greater, better product. It's really by trying to define yourself in the marketplace and be able to grab that market share from them. So venture capital firms, NPE firms, become very skeptical if you are going to go into a very large market against an industry leader that has brand equity and has great product that customers are very loyal to. And I've seen this time and time again, working with Nike and Adidas, seeing some of these competitors come in the marketplace. Not that they don't have a great product, it's just that there's no loyalty. So that's a big challenge for them. So that's number three, and that's mentioned 70% of the time when you're doing a deal. And the fourth one, or the fifth one actually, is valuation. And what's interesting with valuation is when I talk to entrepreneurs, and this is where the disconnect comes from many times, from venture capital firms to entrepreneurs, is, well, what should my valuation be? To a certain degree, it's irrelevant. And what I say by that is it's number five on the list, and it's mentioned very infrequently because venture capital firms, PE firms, do a discounted cash flow. They don't do that anymore. What they want is they invest money, and they want a cash on cash multiple. And they'll do an internal rate of return, and then the exit opportunity after 4 or 5 years would be ideal for them. So that's really what you're looking at, is the top factors for VC and PE firms are, number one, founders 95% of the time. Number two, a great business plan and a defined opportunity you can execute against 75% of the time. Number three is market size. What's the opportunity? And right in tandem with that is the industry itself, market size and industry. If you've got an industry leader with a lot of brand equity like a Nike or an Under Armour or Adidas, good luck. That's a real difficult sell to somebody on a category that's very crowded, very large, with some really ingrained competitors. That's very difficult. Find a subset. Find the athleisure opportunity inside of apparel where you don't have to deal against those industry leaders like a Nike or Adidas. It's not big enough for them, but big enough for you and big enough for a VC firm. And the fifth one is valuation. And again, valuation is not their primary motive. It's really relative to whatever cash they have to invest inside the company off the business plan and defining a cash on cash multiple at the end of exit period and defining that through an internal rate of return, an IRR, is traditionally what they're going to use. Now, the fifth point is then the deal itself. What do they offer up after their deal? And this is also a question I get many times from entrepreneurs is, well, what do I get if I sell half my company to a VC firm? I don't want to do that. And I always go back to the idea when I talk to entrepreneurs, I said, isn't it better to have something of something than nothing of nothing? I mean, you're going to get 100% of nothing, or you're going to get 50 or 30% of something that's going to be well-funded with a lot of support along the way in order to make it successful. They've got a vested interest in your success. They're not a bank. They're not giving you a loan. They're giving you cash to grow your company. And as a result of that, the top five things that they're going to be doing post-deal is, number one, 90% of the time, they're going to be providing guidance to the owners inside the company on how to get and execute upon their business plan. Number two is that they're going to be bringing in investors 70% of the time. Number three, they'll bring in connections 70% of the time. Number four, they're going to support you on the operations and the build out of your business. That's probably one of the biggest areas of weakness inside of a great company with a great idea is the ability to pull all of the logistics of their company together in the operations and the sourcing, financing, whatever it may be. They really need support in operation. It's a very broad term, but one that's probably needed the most by small companies. And then number five is bringing people on their board. So on post-deal, the advantage you get by giving up equity is number one, guidance. Number two, you get investors. Number three, you're going to have connections. Number four, operations. And then five is a board. So really important on post-deal that you get some type of an idea of what are they offering up outside of money. That's why you really want to make sure it's somebody on the VC side. And you probably won't get through the deal anyway unless they have a core competency in your product category or your service. You want to make sure somebody that can actually provide that to you post-deal. So I've been with and seen many companies where they have people coming on this traditionally as just individual investor money, people that just have an affinity for a category, golf or apparel or footwear, whatever it is, not understanding how to build the business and grow the business. And as a result, become impatient, cannot lend support to the company, and don't understand why they're not growing or where they're not succeeding. So make sure on post-deal. So that's where you really have that expertise of a VC or PE. They're going to go through that whole process. And that's the reason they eliminate over 99% of the deals is because when they eventually get to post-deal, they're going to be able to offer up these benefits. And again, I go back to, these are the five deals that I talked about with the VC companies, the hunt, the odds, the timeline for close, the factors in the deal itself, and success or failure. And I go back to what is the number one most indicated item for a success or failure with a company and a startup with a VC. It's again, management team, the vision, the ability to execute, and having them in place prior to seeking money from a VC. You may have a great idea, maybe the biggest opportunity that they've ever looked at, but I can tell you, if you don't have your team solidified, it's going to be very difficult for you to even get an offer on the table or much less get a direct meeting with them. So success or failure, number one thing is the management team and a vision executed. And where are they located? You know, a lot of times this shroud and a mystery, they're traditionally very small firms. And how do you contact them? And so when you look at VC firms, PE firms, it's usually almost exclusively done through connections, through networking, and making sure that you have that networking done before you reach out for a potential deal or an opportunity. And once you do, the great thing about it is you've established a connection and a long-term relationship with a VC firm that's probably going to need your help going forward if you're part of an exit. So that's a real big benefit long-term for you as well. And they're always on the hunt, always looking for a deal. You can imagine if they're funneling 100 deals and windling it down to less than 1%, they need that funnel filled all the time with potential deals. So first and foremost, before you approach a VC, understand the factors, the hunt, the odds behind getting a VC interested in your company. You can do it, but just make sure you understand what their priorities are, what they can bring to the deal, and what the factors are. And if you do that, you'll have a better chance than most to strike a deal with a VC. Would like to thank you for listening to the Visionary Chronicles today. I really appreciate your time, and hopefully you've enjoyed the subjects that we talk about each week here on the Visionary Chronicles, and we feel it's very important. We understand that there's professional needs and support you need with your companies and with your brands, but we also appreciate the fact that you've got some personal needs. As leaders of companies and brands, there are many things that you have to deal with, and we want to make sure that we're addressing those as well. If you like what you hear, we would really appreciate subscribing to The Visionary Chronicles. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and Podbean. So we would really appreciate if you'd subscribe and look forward to bringing additional episodes to you each week. So again, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Look forward to the next podcast.